Attention unsuspecting consumers. It is okay, repeat okay, for chicken to be shipped across country. In fact, you can refreeze it and refreeze it over and over and...
forget what your grandmother taught you.
Forget what your mother taught you.
Oh, grandmother.
Sorry, grandmother. You know, just because Foster Farms is delivered fresh daily does not mean...
Wait, I forgot what I was... You're an idiot, you know that?
Yeah, you're all idiots, you know that?
Oh, God. Yeah.
Hey everybody, welcome back to My Life as a Foodie. Hey, things are starting to get back to normal now. Had a slab leak in our house. Listen, you want to talk about a nightmare? You can hear the water going, right? But you can't see it because it's underneath your house. We had our pipes completely restored with this e-pipe solution, so we don't have to worry about that for a while. No more future leaks, maybe forever. I don't know how long it lasts. Ira Brill, Director of Marketing and Advertising Services for Foster Farms, we'll be calling in shortly. For those of you who don't know who Foster Farms are, they're a family-owned and operated chicken producer right here in California. And they have operations in Oregon, Washington, Alabama as well. But their chickens and the turkeys that they raise are natural. They contain no added hormones, steroids, artificial flavor, flavoring, coloring, preservatives, salt water, any of that crap that you'll find in generically wrapped chicken at the meat counter. Foster Farms is taking part in this new resolution by the California State Capitol called Eat Local, Buy California Grown Day. Now, this all started, I got a press release. This PR person contacted me, Laura, and she sent me this press release, and she hooked me up with Ira, who was taking part in all this. It started when California lawmakers and agriculture leaders gathered at the state capitol for California Ag Day recently. And they announced this new resolution that dedicates Sundays to Eat Local, Buy California Grown Day. It's a resolution that's authored by Assemblymember Kathleen Galgiani. She's the chairman of Assembly Committee on Agriculture and Assemblymember Fiona Ma. They're currently moving this through the House with a prediction to pass within the next month. And it asks all Californians to dedicate at least one day a week to eating locally grown foods, which could mean up to $15.6 billion in food sales staying in the state of California to benefit California and its residents. This hits right to the heart of the podcast. 4 years I've been doing this. 4 years I've been saying the same thing. Support local. If you can, keep it in California. Listen, I've got a friend who grows avocados, Mark, all right? When I go in the store and I see avocados from Mexico, I don't touch them. If I'm not getting avocados from Mark, I'll try to find California avocados. And I don't want to get crazy here, but if you're supporting any growers outside of the United States alone, you're supporting terrorism, all right? So don't support terrorism. Buy California grown. It's simple enough. This resolution has the potential to keep critical dollars in California supporting local farmers, employees, family businesses, and our bounty of California-grown food products. If you know anything, if you haven't been sleeping, you realize that California is in dire straits. Financially, we're ruined. We're poor. We're broke. I mean, this is important right now because according to most recent statistics that they ran for 2008 and 2009, California agriculture experienced a 9% drop in sales of its products. Those are valuable dollars that leave our state every year as California lags behind the rest of the nation in economic recovery. And we are in trouble. Nearly 20 California crop and agriculture associations representing the leading agriculture state in the country, that's us, with a staggering $34.9 billion in annual revenue and tens of thousands of direct and indirect jobs have signed on as supporters for the resolution. One of these associations was the California Poultry Federation. They found that out-of-state poultry producers from as far away as Texas and Arkansas, Tyson, are astonishingly reaping an estimated $250 million annually from California consumers. That's nearly $230 million that could be staying right here in California and supporting local economies, our communities, our family-owned farms for poultry alone. That's just poultry. $250 million. This, despite the bounty of fresh, quality foods grown right here in our own state by fellow Californians. During this press conference at California Ag Day, where the resolution was announced, Ira Brill from Foster Farms, who's going to be calling in shortly, provided a case study example of a California company that faced real challenges from out-of-state food sales and the dumping of cheap chicken in California by national corporate producers. Now listen, Katrina and I, we eat a lot of Foster Farms chicken. At least twice a week, we're eating Foster Farms. It's a great product. It tastes incredible. It's fresh. And considering this, considering that it's all natural, it's not pumped full of steroids, salt water, growth hormones, it's still very affordable. Ira's calling in now, so before we get him on the phone, I wanted to play a quick commercial from Foster Farms. They've got the best commercials. All the commercials are about these two fat, unhealthy-looking chickens. They're driving through the country into California looking to become Foster Farms chickens. They're in this old beat-up car with Arkansas plates. They're eating junk food. They drink soda. And they tell everybody they're from Foster Farms. They're funny. They're effective. And we always look forward to seeing new ones.
I don't know, Doc. I feel all bloaty.
That's because I plumped you. I plumped you good. I injected you with salt water. So not only do you look plumper, you also weigh more. People have to pay more. A lot of chickens have it done.
Are Foster Farms chickens plumped with salt water?
Yeah, Doc, because we want to look naturally plump.
Hey, Marcy, do these chickens look naturally plump?
Yes, very natural.
Although we could go plumper.
Say no to plumping. Foster Farms, always natural, always fresh.
When I eat chicken, I eat Foster Farms chicken. It's California grown, family owned, all natural. And when you eat their chicken, you're not only helping yourself, you're supporting the economy of California, which has never been as important as it is right now. Ira Brill, Director of Marketing for Foster Farms, joins us now. Ira, welcome to the show.
It's great to be here.
Ira, I explained the Eat Local initiative to my audience at the top of the hour, but Foster Farms is also promoting this new 48 Hours campaign. What does 48 Hours refer to exactly?
Well, Phil, what it really talks about is we get chicken to the store in 48 hours, and that really is because we are locally grown. If you're looking at, you know, chicken that comes in from the south, it can take 4 days, sometimes a week, to get here. And the, you know, faster it gets to the store, the fresher it is.
So these chickens come to the store, they're not frozen.
That's correct. They're all fresh.
And they're not traveling very far.
That's right.
Above all else, as I hit on earlier here, we need to keep things local. If you're listening and you live in California, keep things local. Support our economy. We need the injection. There's no need to buy chickens from out of state when you're getting a fresh chicken from Foster Farms anytime and widely available. You guys are available everywhere now, right?
Oh, just about everywhere between San Diego and Seattle. And you're right about the economy. I mean, the poultry industry alone employs about 25,000 people in the state and really adds billions back, you know, in terms of salaries, in terms of taxes. And there's certainly an economics, incentive to this, but really, you're just feeding your family better and helping out people in the state.
Now, how are you able to deliver chickens in 48 hours?
Well, we own our own trucking company, for one thing, and we, you know, have spent more than 70 years in this business, and I think it is simply understanding what's the best way to raise chickens, what's the best way to process them, and you know, we just excel. I think really what it comes down to is there's just a very strong commitment that began with the founders of the company, as I said, 70 years ago, to do it right, and that means getting it to the store fast.
So I read this stat that $230 million is being taken out of the pockets of the California poultry industry annually because of poultry products that are bought from out-of-state producers. Is that true?
That's right.
That's a lot of money.
Yeah, it is. That's why we created the imposters that you see in the TV commercials, because they are, in fact, you know, trying to fawn themselves off as California chickens.
So obviously there are health benefits to eating a fresh chicken. What are the other benefits of buying a Foster Farms 48-hour chicken?
Well, I mean, there's an environmental footprint, benefit because we are local. You know, there's just less environmental cost in terms of bringing it to your table. I think the other thing, too, is that the welfare standards, the animal welfare standards in the poultry industry, not only at Foster Farms, but across the entire industry, are really some of the best in the nation. In fact, I would say the best in the nation. And, you know, that's an increasing concern with the consumer today. It's raising the chicken right. What I tell people is if you taste, you can taste the difference. And I think that's just very important.
Yeah, absolutely true. You think about this. Foster Farms, fresh, naturally grown, hormone-free, no steroids. That sets Foster Farms apart right there. But what gets me, and it's been a big part of your advertising, is this salt water injection. People might find other chicken products on sale. They're saying it's cheaper. But they're paying for salt water, too. And I don't think that's fair.
That's right. I mean, there is chicken, and at this point, it all comes in from out of state, that can have up to 15% salt water in it. And really, there's two aspects to that. Number one, you're paying 15% of your dollar for salt instead of chicken. And secondly, you know, there's a lot of evidence that we have too much sodium in our diets as it is. What we tell, you know, people is if you like salt, you ought to be able to add salt to your chicken, you know, at your discretion, rather than having it come with the salt already in it.
Ira, how long have you been with Foster Farms?
Almost 4 years.
What made you want to work for this company?
Well, I've lived in the Central Valley for where we're located almost 30 years. And, you know, I knew a lot of people that worked at the company before I joined it. And it really, there are a lot of companies that have values and claim to have values. These people really live by their creed. And it's a very refreshing type of company to work for.
Foster Farms is available in California, Oregon, Washington, Alabama, and Colorado. Did I miss any states?
We have a little bit of distribution in Utah and Denver and Nevada. I think what we're really known for is chicken that's raised locally in California and in the Pacific Northwest.
Well, California is responsible for a lot of the country's produce. Would Foster Farms ever feel comfortable with the responsibility of being known as America's chicken? Or would you fear that kind of expansion might dilute the quality of your brands?
I think it would be very difficult to do, because what we don't want to do is grow chicken in California and ship it, you know, to Maryland or ship it to Georgia or ship it to Illinois. I mean, our whole production model is based on locally grown. And, you know, we're very fortunate. This company, because it started so many years ago, has the agricultural acreage to be able to grow these chickens locally. We really wouldn't be able to do that across most of the country.
Has there ever been a discussion for Foster Farms to branch out into raising an organic line of chickens?
We have talked about it. I think there are some developments with the chicken in terms of how we produce it that we're getting increasingly close to it. Yet, truthfully, what we try to do and what we say to people is this, that organic chicken is certainly, you know, very, very good chicken. It's also more expensive to produce. And what we're trying to do is produce a nutritious product that the average Californian can afford. Because, you know, let's face it, the average family has gotten pretty hammered in this recession. So I think that that's something that's maybe down the road, but just because of the way the economy is today, for us to get, you know, chicken to people that's good, that's healthy, that they can afford, that's a step we have to wait on.
And it's amazing that you've been able to produce a product of this quality that is not bad for you.
I mean, it's low in fat, it's lean, it's, the other great thing about chicken, I'll tell you two things, and, you know, you asked me about working for the company and things like that. Some of the things that I find interesting about chicken is that it is consumed all over the world, in every culture, and by every religion. Now, there are some places you can't get fish. There are some religions that don't eat pork. But everybody embraces chicken. It is a worldwide product. And part of that is because there are so many different ways that you can prepare it. It's something that, you know, you really never get bored of.
Here in our house, we eat Foster Farms chicken 2 to 3 times a week. And we're having it tonight, in fact. And listen, Ira, if I was involved in a religion that wouldn't allow me to eat chicken, I would jump ship immediately.
That's why there aren't any.
Now, that's a really good point, Ira. I never really thought about it.
No, it's true. And I really believe that. I mean, it's interesting because if you look at China, China has become a more industrialized country, their consumption of chicken is going up.
How long has the California poultry industry taken a hit from out-of-state producers?
Oh, it's probably been going on for at least 20 years because this is a very attractive market. You know, it's a big market. It's typically a market where people, you know, do have the money to buy quality protein and even less than quality protein. And, yeah, it's been going on for some time.
And the main difference here in Foster Farms and the out-of-state growers is that you don't have other growers growing chickens for you, raising these chickens. I mean, you guys are growing them yourself.
That's right. That's right. We own principally all the ranches that we raise our chickens on. And what that enables us to do is to really control the quality, not only of the meat that's produced, but also the quality of life for the chicken. So if you go into our ranches, the temperatures are controlled, the feed is controlled, and the feed, you know, principally consists of corn and soy, which are, you know, two of the best things a chicken can eat and likes to eat. We're able to control, you know, the water that they get. So it's part of what enables us to ensure. And when I talk to consumers about Foster Farms, one of the things I hear over and over again, it's always good. You know, I've never had a bad piece of Foster Farms chicken. It's always delicious. That's because we have tremendous quality control that we're able to exercise through the whole process.
And maybe the most important part of all this, Ira, is that your chickens are raised cruelty-free.
That's right. I mean, you know, if you go into one of our barns, one of the things I've always been fascinated about, you know, the old saying that, you know, birds of a feather flock together, you see that. The chickens, you know, certainly have adequate space, but they tend to huddle together. And it's interesting because people will ask me, well, are your chickens free range? And the answer is no, they're not. But in free range ranching, what you will always find is the majority of the chickens are indoors because when they're outside, they're subject to predators.
Oh, yeah, free range, organic, phenomenal. They're the key words that people latch on to. None of that matters. All that matters is that the chicken lives a good life, is raised well, is fed well, is taken care of, up until the time, of course, that you have to have it, and that it consistently tastes good. And I think, you know, that has a lot to say for Foster Farms, that you guys have produced chickens that taste great every time, consistently, and that really does have a lot to say for the quality of Foster Farms chicken.
No, I couldn't have said it better myself, though. I think that's true. I eat a lot of Foster Farms. I eat it, like you, several times a week, and I feel good about it. You know, I really do. I really do think that we have a great product. We're very proud of being locally produced. You know, as you mentioned earlier, we're encouraging people to eat local Sunday, and there's two things about that. That's not just about us. We also want people, you know, for example, to, you know, cook with other California crops, whether it's almonds, asparagus, artichokes, what have you. And the other thing that we like about local Sunday is there's been so much fragmentation, you know, in our society and with our families. You know, get together with your family, your significant other, and just take a break and, you know, share a meal together with some locally produced products, and we hope one of them would be Foster Farms.
Well, you're a kindred soul, Ira. You know, I've been preaching that very thing for 4 years. I've been doing this show. Every time I open my mouth, that's what I say. Eat locally, eat fresh, eat together, as I think that's a really important thing, and perhaps maybe that was that connection that I had all along with Foster Farms. But again, getting back to this whole, you know, eating locally thing, I said this earlier on the show. If you live in California and you're buying produce or products outside of California, or worse, out of the country, you are a communist and you're supporting terrorism and you shouldn't be listening to my show.
Well, that's a pretty strong statement. But, you know, look, the truth of the matter is that there are a lot of crops in California that, you know, are having difficulties for any number of reasons. I was down, for example, at the Garlic Festival last year, and I was amazed how much those guys are struggling with the issue of garlic being produced in China. It almost seems ridiculous that you would be buying garlic from China in California.
Ira, I'm going to let you go, but before I do, I wanted to tell you that the commercials with these two bloated, unhealthy chickens are the funniest, most effective of all food commercials for me. I applaud your message in those commercials. I wouldn't want to eat those chickens, but they do make me laugh.
Well, I'm glad you enjoy them, and you should keep an eye out for the new commercials, which all talk about how, as I said before, we get chicken to to the store 48 hours fresh.
And listen, if you ever decide to make a full feature-length movie starring those two chickens, you'd be looking at an easy three-picture deal, I'm telling you.
Okay, we'll take that. We'll keep that in mind.
Visit fosterfarms.com for more information about Foster Farms. The Eat Local, Buy California Grown Day movement celebrates California agriculture, its growers, its producers, Foster Farms being one of them. There's a link on our website, mylifeasafoodie.com, where you can like the movement on Facebook, buy California-grown poultry and produce. Ira, thanks for taking the time to talk with us today, man.
Very good. I enjoyed it, Phil.
Cheers.
Thank you.
Sure. So we got this detector about a week ago, and we are using it now for a week in a restaurant on all produce, seafood, everything that comes through the door of the restaurant is tested through the detector.
Now, some would say that's maybe going a bit too far, to an extreme level. Why did you decide this was so important for you to be absolutely positively certain nobody who's in your restaurant is getting anything that could be radioactive?
I wanted to make sure, because some of our clients were asking actually if the seafood source was reliable, if what we serve is fine and so on. Our staff was concerned. I was concerned myself. I trust, obviously, the government and the agencies for testing it. However, I thought by having a machine at the restaurant, it will really make us feel much more comfortable to talk to our clients for ourselves. And I was very confident that we would find absolutely nothing in terms of radiations. And the result is that we find absolutely nothing.
And help that into context. You say some of your clients, some of your staff were concerned, having questions. Well, what percentage? How widespread were the doubts, were the questions saying, hey, are we sure here?
Well, every night, every lunch, we have about 4 or 5 tables out of 25 to 30 tables who are concerned and are asking questions, and they want to know where it's coming from and if we have informations. And therefore, it's logical for us to have the right tool to be able to address those issues to them.
And am I right in saying you have stopped buying fish from Japan, correct?
Well, we bought in Japan in the past kampachi and amachi, which is coming from a farm from the south of Japan, which is supposedly not contaminated. However, our purveyor told us last week that it will be very difficult to get some quantities that we needed, and the price will be very high. And therefore, we decided to stop using it at the restaurant. But it had nothing to do with the fact that we thought it was contaminated.
On the one hand, people would watch you and say, amen, bravo, you're taking this extra precaution. On the other hand, some people might say, well, might that not, seeing a famous chef with his dosimeter checking for radiation, might not that add to the concern and add to the alarm unnecessarily? How did you decide, you know what, I'm going to tilt the balance toward extra precautions?
No, actually, I thought by having this machine, we will have a clear message saying that everything is safe, and it will be a positive reaction from the public, potentially. And that's what we are hoping, because we're still using Japanese ingredients coming out of Japan, and I have no intentions of taking it from the menu. And we are using a lot of seafood from the West Coast and from the East Coast, and therefore, I think today I can clearly say that whatever we have seen on the market and at the restaurant is, to our knowledge, thanks to that machine, not contaminated, and it's a good news.
A lot of people get skeptical about information from their government in places like this, and we have seen some conflicting and some confusing messaging from the government of Japan. The United States has been as transparent, we believe anyway, in releasing as quickly as it can the readings from the West Coast and elsewhere. This is so critical to your business. Help reassure people out there. You said earlier you have full faith in what the information you're getting from the government about this?
Oh, yes, absolutely. I strongly believe that they're doing the best they can. The government in Japan seems to be very transparent about the issues that they have. And we are confident with them. And now we have the machine, and it's even confirming even more what they are saying, which is the food that comes to America and the food that we are consuming is safe. And I'm happy about that. And it's not, you know, it's not about scaring people. Actually, it's about stopping conspiracy theories and stopping paranoia in some cases to some degree to some people.
Okay, listen to this. This is crazy. You remember in the last show, I went a little overboard with my, you know, my ranting. And one of the things I talked about was Goose Island selling out to Anheuser-Busch for like $38 million. Well, that week, oh, all hell broke loose. I almost feel like maybe I shouldn't have come to this guy's defense at all. And now I probably won't even talk about him again. This will be the last time I'll mention Goose Island. Greg Hall is the chief brewer at Goose Island. That week, that Friday, he went out partying with his buddies and got crazy. He urinated in two beer glasses in this bar called Bangers and Lace during a Friday night drinking binge. He sheepishly apologized to bar employees, and he told the Chicago Tribune that he didn't remember much from the incident, but he felt awful about it. Now listen, we've all been blitzed, all right? We've all gotten a little crazy. Have you ever gone to a bar and pissed in a pint glass? I mean, seriously? Maybe we've peed on a wall or we've peed in a bush. But have you ever peed in something that someone drinks out of or peed on dishes where people, you know, eat food off of? And if you did, would you not remember that? Even in your drunken stupor, you'd remember doing something that dumb. He said, I did what I did, and I take responsibility for it. I wouldn't stand it if someone did that in my place or if one of my people did something like that. This bartender, who worked for Bangers, told the paper that Hall and some of his brewery pals spent several hours getting trashed on Goose Island's strongest Belgian-style ales when he spotted Hall leaning against the front of the bar looking down. After he finished up, the bartender, Matty Eggleston is his name, he heard him tell his friends, don't drink that. Yeah, I don't think I'll be drinking that. So Eggleston said he confronted Hall. He told him, oh, that's beer. So the bartender says, hey, how about a toast? But, you know, the brewer, this guy Hall, he turns around, he takes off. He says, look, even though he apologized, he sent him a Facebook message. This is how he apologizes. Apologizes on Facebook and then offers him a free case of Goose Island beer. I don't think so. The guy says, that was disgusting, vile, revolting. We all do dumb things, but that took it to an insulting level. This guy's father started the Goose Island in 1988, and this kid sells it and then starts displaying Anheuser-Busch type behavior. Let that be the last time I speak of Goose Island, and man, I'll tell you, don't ever do that. Okay, here's an interesting thing I read about a week and a half ago, and this ties in kind of with everything. This report came out that 1 in 4 supermarket meat samples were tainted with drug-resistant bacteria. About half the meat samples nationwide had evidence of S. aureus contamination. Consumers may be weary of hearing about what's wrong with their meat, from calories to E. coli. Unfortunately, there's another bit of bad news. Nearly a quarter of the meat sold in U.S. supermarkets is infected with nasty drug-resistant bacteria. That's according to researchers at the Translational Genomics Research Institute. They took samples of meat around the country. They found that 47% had evidence of Staphylococcus aureus. I can't. Boy, that's nuts. Staphylococcus. More than half of the bacteria they found were resistant to at least 3 classes of antibiotics, according to the study published in the journal Clinical Infectious Diseases. Oh, hey, I'll take that one into the restroom with me. Clinical Infectious Diseases. Do you have Life? No, I'll just take this one. Ooh, what a read. For the first time, we know just how much of our meat is contaminated with antibiotic-resistant staph, and it is substantial. That's Lance B. Price, senior author of the study and director of TGen's Center for Food Microbiology and Environmental Health. There are more than 30 types of Staphylococcus, but this particular strain causes most staph infections in humans, including skin infections, food poisoning. The drug-resistant strains found in the meat are specifically difficult to treat because they're evolved beyond the regular arsenal of drugs that are made to kill them. The researchers said that most staph found in meat can be eliminated by cooking food thoroughly, but it can still pose a risk to consumers if handled unsafely or if it cross-contaminates with other things in your kitchen. Now, this is why I've been saying for a long time, especially on Dude Food when I did chicken wings, the cutting board, the knife, your hands, anything that comes in contact with raw chicken or raw meat, wash it with hot water, soap, sterilize it in the dishwasher. Do not let anything that comes in contact with that come in contact with anything else. You've got to be safe. You're probably going to be okay, but you have to be safe. You don't want to be sick. You don't want to get your family sick. Just be careful. But this also is one of the reasons why you should just take a little bit of caution in where you buy your meat. You know, if you're buying generic meat, you don't know where it comes from, you don't know anything about the farm, then you're kind of running a risk anyway. You know, a place like Foster Farms that, you know, does things the way they should be done and they don't have sick chickens walking around, I think that, you know, you're riding a bit of a more safe bet in that direction. And the same goes with, you know, beef and everything else. And that gets me to my next thing. You know, Katrina and I are back on the horse. Now, I can't wait for summer to come. Winter sucked, okay? Not only for what we were dealing with personally, but you know, winter vegetables, I don't know. I can only eat so many root vegetables. But lettuce grows like crazy in the winter, it turns out. But who likes to eat lettuce when it's cold? You know, you want lettuce when it's hot. In the summer, in the spring, when it's warm outside, a nice cool salad sounds great, but not in the winter. So anyway, farmer's market, we just, you know, we weren't going that often, and I don't know, I just got kind of bummed out about everything. So now things are better. We're at the Irvine Farmer's Market. There's tons of great farms there, lots of farms. Some of the farmers are certified organic and have big banners with the number on them. It said, here's our, you know, certification number. There's a number there. I thought, well, that's cool. I don't need anything from you, but that's cool. There was this guy who sold only citrus, and he had these lemons that basically the outside of them kind of had like the skin of a snake. But when you opened it up, because they grow in sand and hot desert climates, and as the trees that he has kind of grow in that area. And when you open the lemon up, he squeezed it, and almost a pint of juice came out of this thing. I was like, holy crap. How is that even possible? And then he had some limes. He goes, oh, those are for my tree at home. I'm like, okay, I'm sold. There was another farm there from Fresno, sold nothing but fruit. That farm had been there since 1903. And they had a ton of great stuff, had a lot of nuts. There were some really good growers there, really good producers. But the best one was this guy who was an old cattle rancher who's selling grass-fed beef. He raises these cattle in Arizona. And then he brings the yearlings here to Riverside in California, where he finishes them off on grass, has them humanely slaughtered and butchered, and sells a lot of it at the farmer's market. Big old rough-looking dude, bad teeth, big 10-gallon hat, pot belly. And I'm talking to this guy, and I'm really getting a kick out of just how he is, because he's rough. So I told him about this report. I just read this report. I said, did you know, as we were talking about the, you know, why you should buy grass-fed beef, I said, they ran this report that 1 in 4 supermarket meat samples were tainted with this drug-resistant bacteria. And he leans back and he goes, well, I think that's a crock of shit. I said, okay. I think it's probably much higher than that. Maybe like 9 and 10 or 10 and 10. That meat ain't no good. And they're eating corn and getting injected with antibiotics. And I go, yeah. You know what? You sound like me. Just bigger. It was a kick in the ass, man. This guy was awesome. So, he was just funny. Kept going on about how, you know, people need to be a little bit more careful about what they put on the table. And I was like, exactly. So, what I'm going to try to do is, I'm going to try to convince him to come on. I'll take my recorder there with me and interview him, maybe do an expose on his ranch and, you know, have him plug it a little bit. But it was just funny, man. This dude, he was on it. And I go, this guy, preaching to the choir. But I would just love to just turn it on and let him go. Because it's quite entertaining. Anyway, so it's looking up. Irvine Farmers Market on Saturdays. Dave Lieberman from OC Weekly told me about it. I had been there before, a couple times, but now I'm serious about it, and I know where to go. I know which farms I want to shop from. Of course, you know, there's always those generic places where the people working there don't look like they really own a farm. They don't look like they're from here either. And there's no labels anywhere. They're selling everything. Everything's kind of generic. They're not telling you where things are from, the different varieties, like everybody else. Everybody else is touting it because they know what they're growing, and they know the differences in everything because they really grew it. They didn't just buy it somewhere. But, you know, you've got to be careful. That's all. And that is all I have for today. Thanks for tuning in. We've got a great video coming soon. Don and I are going to show you how to make garlic aioli. It's the official sauce of Provence. It's simple, it's easy, it's delicious. If you know anything about Provence, I don't know if it's like this now, but in years ago, they were poor there. So they didn't eat a lot of meat. They grew a lot of vegetables, and they would have this aioli at the table, which is like a garlic mayonnaise. And they would dip the vegetables in the aioli, and it became a staple. And so that's this kind of celebrates that. It's really cool, and we've got really good footage. Don't forget to check out the website, mylifeasafoodie.com. We have links to the Eat Local Initiative Facebook page. Thanks to Ira from Foster Farms. Thanks to Laura from Feynman PR. And thanks to all of you for your patience. Katrina and I continue to deal with our things that we're dealing with. I appreciate that you guys are there and that you're patient with me. I promise that once this is all over, we're going to kick serious ass here. Until next time, my name is Phil. This has been My Life as a Foodie.